next speaker is Dr. Tom Sowers. He's going to talk about carbon dioxide fluxes and carbon storage of a tree windbreak and adjacent field.
Thank you, Ranjit. Good morning, everyone. And thanks to Allah for a wonderful introduction to my talk. My co-authors are Christian Dold, who's a postdoc in our lab, and two people from the School of Natural Resources at University of Nebraska, Lincoln, Dave Wadeen and Andy Syker. Unfortunately, things didn't go quite as planned this year, so we're not going to be talking a lot about the micrometeorology, which I had hoped to complement the soils work that Allah had talked about, but we will give sort of a progress report and update of the measurements that we have been able to complete. As Allah mentioned, tree windbreaks have quite a long history in the U.S. Great Plains, and they were planted in these semi-arid regions largely to protect the crops, to reduce soil erosion. That was the big motivation. And there's some really neat work done by the Forest Service recently where we have maps of where all these windbreaks were planted during the 1930s, and they've gone back to look to see if they're still there. Many of them are, but many of them are also missing, have been replaced, or are been removed. But also what's interesting is that many more have been planted. So that's, I think, a validation of the fact that the landowners saw value in this practice, and even when government support maybe wasn't there to continue, they did on their own. So they planted more windbreaks even after the program then ended. The objective of this research is to quantify components of the carbon cycling in these systems. You might ask, why isn't this work been done in the past? But think about the changes that have happened over the decades in terms of cropping systems, the climate that's changed in some of these regions. It's really like a whole different ball game, so to speak. And so we really wanted to look at and quantify what's happening now under these modern cropping systems and with the climate conditions that we have. And I don't think anyone said the word soil health yet in this session, but that's part of the title, and certainly a large part of the discussion in soil science recently is what are the effects of different systems on soil health, and we all have a different definition of what soil health is, I think. Again, I have a long list of people that have assisted us in any field project, of course, technicians and students and farm managers who've helped with this project, kindly allowed us to do the work in Nebraska away from our site, and then the support from North Central Sarah Ala mentioned, and also more recently this year the North Central Regional Sun Grant Program, which has been supporting our work. So this is a view of the Eastern Nebraska Research and Extension Center. The carbon sequestration project sites, there are three of those, the rain-fed corn-soybean, irrigated corn soybean and irrigated continuous corn. There have been eddy flux stations and a whole series of biophysical measurements made at those sites for over a decade. So there's a long, strong history of data collection from those systems. And fortunately, they're just a couple of miles away from our site, the Yellow Star, which is inside the Meade Agroforestry Research Site, which has a whole series of tree windbreaks. So we're in this wonderful situation of having a strong history of detailed measurements of cropping systems from this region, and we're in a sheltered site, literally right next to them. And so our plan is to set up similar kind of monitoring systems in a sheltered environment, and we are in the process of synchronizing all of our cropping and management practices with the practices that are ongoing at those carbon sequestration sites. I also indicate a couple of, there's SOC and SOC and litter arrows there. That's some previous work and some of Allah's work, just to show the relationship where it is physically compared to where the NLAE site that I'm going to be talking about. So here's our site. Again, unfortunately, I'm not going to be talking a lot about this transect of biophysical measurements in the flux tower. Things just didn't quite work out, so we're going to be focusing more on the soil in the soil CO2 fluxes in this talk. It's a L-shaped field, and there are two windbreaks that are a red cedar. This is a three-row, about a 30-year-old windbreak, 9 meters tall, and this one on the south is also about the same age. It's only two-row and a little bit taller. So we have two experiments that we're initiating at this project. One is this so-called root litter manipulation study, which I'll be talking about shortly, and the other is the transect study. The root manipulation study, so you know, we can measure soil CO2 flux underneath this windbreak, but we'd like to really know what the contributions are from root respiration, soil respiration, and the decomposition of the litter. So we're designing a grid experiment where we can manipulate the roots in the litter to partition those different contributions to the soil CO2 flux. So we set out a series of collars in the soil where we can measure CO2 flux and also the greenhouse gas fluxes. That's why there's two different sizes of collars in the ground. And they're laid out in this replicated design, and the larger blocks are so that we can make deep soil measurements of temperature and moisture content over a larger area that we don't have to worry about boundary effects. So far, all we've been doing is monitoring and measuring. We haven't established any of these treatments yet, perhaps next year. The transect study, so we have a series of collars from drip line to drip line across this windbreak, and then this transect extends out into the field to a distance about 3H into the field, and it was cropped with corn this year. Again, Alice mentioned this, but the soil is the Tomek silt loam, fines, mactitic, mesic, pachic, argyostols. You might ask, well, why didn't we put the transects and the litter study on that south windbreak where the prevailing wind direction crosses that windbreak? There's a good reason for that, and that's the soil map, which I don't show, but there's some soil variability there, and by working in the west windbreak, it allows us to stay in a more uniform, we hope, more uniform soil area. So I'm just going to show some of there's photos here of the transects and the grid design. The white is our path for walking to control our traffic. And then just the average flux data. We used a LI8100 with a 10 centimeter static chamber. The take-home message here is we had 6 dates where we measured all of those collars. And notice that the variation is extremely low inside the windbreak, either both the grid and the transect. Somewhat surprising, well, not so much the grid. We were hoping to have nice uniform fluxes there because we want to have when we install our treatments, we want to go into a uniform system where we're really measuring the differences in the treatments, not the spatial variation. So that's good. The transect was a surprise because we noticed differences in litter depth and temperature and moisture content across the windbreak, but we don't see much difference in fluxes. So that's going to obviously need some more investigation. We do see differences between days, measurement dates. I don't show that, but unfortunately, the collars basically all move up or down together, so it's extremely uniform, surprisingly so. The crop transect also a little bit more variation, but on average about 40% less than under the windbreak. And you know, we obviously need more information, more data. This is all very preliminary to understand actually what's going on there. It was quite dry during some of these measurements, so that could be one of the explanations. Most of these were done in the summer, and the soil was quite dry. I mentioned those other two sites in terms of we'd done previous measurements there. So we sampled our windbreak this summer to 30 centimeters for soil organic carbon. We don't have that data back, but we have other data. The first study here that we did, but I think the sampling was done in 2004. So this has been published in Agroforestry Systems, but we only went to 15 centimeters. And we had about 4 kilograms per square meter of soil carbon underneath the tree windbreak and about 3.6 in the field. So it was actually significantly different. But what's interesting about this is that we also measured the litter content. So we got a nice value of the carbon that was stored in the litter as well. But again, very shallow. And this windbreak is different than ours, of course. It's at a different site. It's quite a lot older and had some different species. Ala has mentioned already the Mead site as being the anomaly, and here's the anomaly. We have much higher carbon in the crop field than we did in under the tree windbreak. I'll take the blame for that. I decided where to sample, so presumably I chose the wrong place. But it's also a different windbreak, and we need to make these deep measurements. Obviously, the measurements going deeper is really, really important, even though it's difficult to do and it's hard to get replication. Going deeper is important, and we need to do that in our windbreak. So we tried to make some estimates now of what the biomass stocks or the carbon stocks at this site are. So we measured the tree spacing, the DBH, and now we've calculated, we've estimated the above ground biomass. We know from our other study what the litter content in this site could be. We estimate the roots, and we combine that, and we add all of that together. If we take that compared to the carbon stocks from Ala's windbreak, it's about 86% of the soil organic carbon. So I know there's lots of arm-waving and estimates here, and our future is to try and tighten up all of those estimates and put real values behind them and start getting in annual increments of what those stocks are at this site. And we want to do, obviously, the same type of analysis for the sheltered environment. So we wanted to look at what the carbon dynamics are there, not only in the soil, the net CO2 exchange, but also what's happening in the crop canopy. We only had an opportunity to measure canopy height and biomass at one time this summer, but you can see there's a really distinct effect of the windbreak next to on the crop growth. We don't have yield data yet. It's not actually been harvested, but there was a dramatic effect on canopy height and biomass next to the windbreak. I'm not convinced it's due to shade because the east-west windbreak had nearly no effect on the crop rows close to it. So I think it was heat and moisture stress. Again, this is all good. It was actually a good summer because it gave us lots of feedback on things that we need to look at in more detail. Talking about soil health, when we measured our soil, took our collars for our samples for soil carbon this year, we measured infiltration using a twin ring technique at this site. And we had greater infiltration underneath the trees. There were 9 sites in the trees, 9 sites in the crop. Greater infiltration under the trees, that's all good. We like that. That sounds like better, more healthy soil. We also measured penetration resistance after the infiltration measurement by pushing a penetrometer into the soil of one of the saturated rings. And saw some very unusual and interesting data there where the penetration resistance was lower underneath the trees, down to about 20 centimeters, and then suddenly it got easier in the crop field. Absolutely no idea why that would be so. Okay, to summarize then, our CO2 fluxes in the windbreak are very uniform. That's good for our grid experiment where we want to manipulate roots and litter. A little bit surprising for the transect because we thought we had differences in temperature and moisture content and litter fall. So we thought we would see differences there, and we really didn't. So again, we need to look at that in more detail. In the crop field, the CO2 fluxes were about 40% lower than in the windbreak, and I don't want to jump to any conclusions here that, you know, the trees are causing increased CO2 fluxes to the atmosphere. It's just one part of the carbon dynamics. So, you know, we have a lot of carbon storage here. We've got to quantify what the deep storage is in the soil and the annual increments in the trees and quantify a lot of different pools yet before we make any sort of conclusions. Again, you know, we made some estimates about what the pools are now, but those are all really just rough estimates, and we know that we can make measurements, we can harvest trees and do things to firm up all of these estimates, and we certainly plan to do so. And of course, one of the big things is trying to synchronize our field measurements, our biophysical measurements in the field, with those carbon sequestration sites, which have, you know, such a rich history of data and ongoing detailed measurements, and we want to match our work with theirs. So, thank you.
Thank you, Tom. We have time for one or two questions for Tom.
Yeah, the question is why the windbreak has higher soil CO2 flux. I'd characterize the environment in there as cool but dry. I think the canopy is pretty dense. It seems to intercept a lot of the small precipitation, and so it seems pretty dry in there. So it's kind of a puzzler to me, because the cool part, you know, it could be more conducive to decomposition in a way, because it's not quite the swings in temperature that we have out in the field, which before the canopy develops, you know, there's a lot of temperature change out there in that soil, which maybe doesn't encourage the microbes so much. So I don't really understand why we had such higher. And we have the litter at some places is only about a centimeter thick, so it's not really accumulating, which you could say, well, that means that it's decomposing, right? But other places it's thicker, but we didn't see any differences in fluxes that kind of go along with those observations in litter fall either. So we need more data. We've heard scientists say that before. Yes.
Going off of that question, from judging from the penetrometer data that you showed, I think it's possible that it increased in the infiltration data too. I think you got higher infiltration under the trees. So do you think that that's maybe a result of just like greater capacity for diffusion of CO2 out of the tree system from deep?
Well, that's actually.
Do you have these larger structural changes in the soil that might be.
That's a good point, actually. The physical properties of the soil may be affecting the diffusion of CO2 in the soil in the field, even though the penetration resistance was not that much higher near the surface. It was a little higher. The infiltration was quite a lot lower, and when the soil is dry, it had crusted, and so it was pretty dense, really. So the diffusion probably was relatively low. So we could have been producing more CO2, and just there's no way for it to quickly get to the surface. That's a good point.
Thank you very much, Tom. Thanks.